take the opportunity, if I could, to certainly thank Ned and Scott. They've helped us, me in particular, going through this process. Their edits and their recommendations have been thoughtful and valuable to the process, so we really appreciate that. They've been great to work with. I also like to thank, we've gone through the process, we've had a lot of input, and I'd like to thank and recognize all the people that have contributed to this process, the practitioners, the societies, the taxpayers. We've tried to be thoughtful and deliberative in all of the input, and I think what we have is a set of rules that's responsive, respectfully responsive to all the input that we've had, and that's appropriate. So if you'd like us to go through and explain the rules, we'll be happy to do that. I'm not quite sure, or we'd be happy to wait till the end and answer any questions if that's more appropriate as well.
I think it probably would be.
Okay.
Would be helpful. Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Kevin Clardy. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue Administration, and with me is John Hayes, who is our Revenue Counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have several cards, the ones from the department. Most of them seem to be in opposition. So.
Did you? Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yep.
Would you like us to go through the changes? To explain it? Maybe it may help the public, I think, to understand the changes in the conditional approval.
If it will make the process cleaner, please do.
I think it would. So
okay.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Mm-hmm.
And you are competing with our attempts to make the roof of the state house, the roof of this building a little more secure.
Okay, I'll do a bit. I'll try and speak up. On page one, that strike through of a corporation, as was mentioned, is it was intended to be struck through in the first place. It was struck through in the fixed text annotated, but was not stricken in the fixed text.
Okay.
On page three.
If I could ask any committee members of the committee, if you have the specific questions as these are being identified, can we address them as they come up, please?
Okay.
And then I'm sure later on we will hear from members.
Okay.
On page three, in the definition of organization, 901.15 I, the language stating in completion, any other legal commercial form of business other than a sole proprietorship not organized as single member LLC, single member living liability company. This language was in response to public comment where the rules it wasn't sufficiently clear to them that distributions from a sole proprietorship were not subject to the interest and dividends rule. And this language clarifies that distributions from a sole proprietorship are not, unless it's organized as a limited liability company, in which case it's treated as any other limited liability company.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand you to say that as we move through the document, you'd like questions?
As these changes are applied.
Okay. I have a question on page two, but I can hold it until we get through the,
I would prefer.
Thank you.
The other change on page two, adding the words or an S corporation into the definition of total undistributed revenues. This coincides with the definition of accumulated profits on page one, where in on 901.08, the definition of accumulated profit states that in the case of an S corporation, other than a subchapter S corporation, the amount determined to be earnings and profits for federal income tax purposes. So for a regular corporation, it looks to earnings and profits. In the case, and then the next section deals with all other item entities, those subject to those trusts with transferable shares, S corporations, limited liability companies, associations and partnerships, the total undistributed revenues of the entity from whatever source to decide. So this change brings that definition of total undistributed revenue in line with the definition of accumulated profits on 901.01, which is also the definition found in the RSA. The RSA, I guess, at the back, in House Bill 2, the legislation that changed RSA 77. So, and that, in more specifically, that also relates to the definition later on in 902.08, where we spelled out how the S Corporation calculates its accumulated profits.
Just a question on that. You said that the House Bill 2 changed 77. Do you have the site where it changed?
Yes.
We have some of the.
Yes, okay. Okay, on Chapter Law 144:275 in the new section, and then right above the first item in that chapter law is 77.1A, the definitions in this chapter, and the definition of accumulated profits is the same as the definition that's in the rule in 901.01.
Thanks for that little melody. I would please remind everyone else, if you could take maybe 10 seconds to just make sure your phones are turned off, or it will give you a strange sensation, but we will not become aware.
So if there are no more questions on that item, I'll move to the change on page 4, having to do with mutual funds, 902.06, D, as was stated by Attorney Lucas, the longstanding policy of the way people file their interest and dividends tax returns with respect to reporting mutual funds, the capital gains from the sale of shares held by the mutual fund were not taxable. And this makes it clear, and it's consistent with the way people are filing for many, many years. And I remember doing my, before I was with the Department of Revenue, doing my wife's grandparents' returns. Mm-hmm. And that was an item that was stated as excluded, capital gains.
Okay, thank you.
On page 5, this was in response to comments by Attorney Lucas and Attorney Eaton that the definition of this provision used formerly applied to partnerships, LLCs, and trusts with transferable shares. And now it just applies to trusts. And so the word owner created an ambiguity where it was more appropriately used with respect to owners of shares in LLCs or transferable shares. This clarifies that you look either to the trustee or beneficiary, so there's no ambiguity. Because of the nature of a trust, there's legal ownership and equitable ownership. On page 6, the addition in 902.08A, the change from.
I'm going to talk before you go there, 902.07 B or B3. I think that was supposed to have been dropped earlier and just simply refused to disappear.
That's correct.
Okay.
It was not in the fixed text annotated.
Okay.
I mean, it was struck through in the fixed text annotated.
And some
love us. We like to blame Bill Gates for that. The next item in 902.08A, change from the word including to excluding an S corporation, is in line with the changes that were made to the definition of undistributed revenues and the addition of a section E in that section specifically dealing with S corporations.
Okay.
It was in response to public comment from the CPA Society pointed that out.
Okay.
The next change on 7, it appears a couple times in section D1B as difficult it is to explain a 179 deduction to lay people. The language wasn't sufficiently clear that you're looking to the federal return to determine your 179 deduction and not the state forms. So this clarifies that the 179 deduction is taken on the federal forms, but then essentially the taxpayers have the option of taking in full in reducing accumulated profits or amortizing it over the life of the assets.
Okay.
And this clarifies that. Well, it attempts to clarify that. And then at the bottom, subsection E was added specifically describing how a shareholder of an S corporation would determine accumulated profits in a manner that's similar to a partnership. They are both passed through entities, although an S corporation legally is more like a C corporation for reporting, federal reporting purposes, tax purposes. It's actually more like a partnership because it's a flow-through entity, and this tracks essentially the same equal treatment. And that was also done in response to public comment from CPAs.
Okay.
Again, there was renumbering because of the addition of that section, and I don't believe there are any more changes other than the example.
Page 9
is the same change that was made in D1B. It's also made on page 9 in, I guess it's F1C. Those are the changes.
Okay. So, you said you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We should go back to page 2 on either the final proposal or the conditional approval.
Let's all work from the conditional approval.
Okay.
And there are plenty of copies, again, for any members of the public, so that we'll all be working from the same page.
If you could walk me through, Mr. Hayes, on 90106, that whole issue of debt financed by the entity and when that's considered a distribution that's taxable and when it isn't, I found myself rather befuddled about that particular point.
Well, Senator, I think you're not alone. But basically, in the original proposal, the initial proposal, it was, and it was addressed in an example also in the initial proposal, where a entity has an appreciated asset, and it borrows against that appreciated asset in order to make a distribution. It hasn't really recognized the gain yet from that sale, and in the initial proposal, the debt finance entity would make taxable that that distribution, even though the entity may not have earnings or accumulated profits. The change that was made to the final proposal was to make eliminate that possibility of a entity recognize a taxable dividend in the case where it had no accumulated profits. And what's looked to is, there's a precondition before someone would receive a taxable dividend. And first of all, that the entity has to have profits. And the debt financed by the entity is meant to reach those ways of giving dividends that are not your typical form of declaring a dividend. It's more of a, it may be an advance or a payment of personal expenses by the entity of the individual. And what's often done is through loans that aren't bona fide loans. So they don't have a repayment, they aren't writing, first of all, a lot of them. They may not have a repayment term, and there may be real no expectation of repayment. This debt financed by the entity is meant to reach those items, those distributions that are disguised dividends. If a entity borrows money in order to make that distribution, it has accumulated profits, but it makes a distribution of profits in a way that is more like a dividend, it will be taxable, but only if it has profits.
And they have to substantiate that.
Follow up, just for clarity. So if I understand, an entity can borrow money and use that money for distribution for some purpose. But if they've shown a profit, they'll get taxed on those distributions, even though I'm just trying to wrap my, debt means you have to pay it back.
Right.
So I can't see any scenario under which those monies, if they weren't commingled with all kinds of other things, those monies would be taxed.
Well, the entity has to pay it back, but it's what you're looking to is the distribution to the individual owner. The individual owner is not responsible for that debt in that case. So although the debt has to be paid back, it's the distribution that's specifically taxable, not the debt, the borrowing.
If it's real debt, you're not going to pay it back, but it is debt.
And I guess the deemed dividend, the sort of disguised dividend, is a situation where the entity makes an advance, a payment of personal expenses, or something that's not really a bona fide loan from the owner, from the shareholder, the entity to the individual. So they may list it on the balance sheet, and I think that is in the example in 903.05, where it's listed on the balance sheet as a shareholder loan, but it's not really a loan because there's no expectation of repayment. There's no written documents stating the terms of the loan. There may not be, and then without any terms, then there's no interest or repayment schedule. So it's really a disguised dividend.
Okay. As okay as I'm going to be at the moment. I'm going to
You indicated you might be in such a case paying someone's expenses.
That's correct. The entity, if the entity paying personal expenses, under existing rules, that would be a way of disguising a dividend, really. And it's been a longstanding part of the IND rules. That's one way that would be viewed as a distribution that's taxable, a dividend. That's taxable.
Well, I suppose if it's a long-standing practice, that casts it in a different light. But it strikes me that if someone is being paid back legitimate expenses, that how that can be a dividend.
It's not repayment of an advance or an expenses. It's payment of personal expenses, which are like the business paying for a vacation for the owner. It's really a way of giving a dividend, getting the money out of the entity, and it's a one way they could formally declare that this is a dividend to the owner. The other way is to, through informal kind of a disguised manner, paying the personal expenses of the owner. They could certainly do it, but it'll be treated. And as long stand, it'd be treated as a dividend.
That's helpful. Okay, thank you.
Senator Bracken?
Thank you very much. I want to explore this disguised dividend a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And in the days when I was fortunate enough to have been making money in an entity, certainly at the advice of my accountant, whenever any money was borrowed, there was either a promissory note
right.
or some kind of formal loan document. I guess, how can you tell when there's an expectation of repayment by the owner, assuming there's a piece of paper that says, I intend to repay them?
Well, you could look to, A, whether there's a payment schedule, and it's may be looked over time, and whether that repayment schedule is actually followed.
Senator Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also a little unsure about this idea of a disguised dividend. So you're telling us that an individual will invest in his own company, his or her own company, and if they seek to then, once they're starting to make money, they're reimbursing themselves, they're now going to be taxed on the money that they put into the company to begin with, like an expense reimbursement, now it's taxed.
No.
It's only, first of all, there has to be profits in order to be a dividend. It's a distribution of profits. So, and basically, in that case, it would be. I mean, once you contribute property, it earns profits, and you start distributing the profits, that's what makes it a dividend.
So if a business owner wanted to get around paying the tax on this disguised dividend, they should formalize any kind of loans that they make from the company? Should they annotate the hours that they work that they're not getting paid for? I mean, are they going to be able to deduct this on their federal tax return? I mean, I just don't see this as being very, very clear here. And I'm really questioning whether or not this was the intent of the legislation. To me, it just seems like this is just going to cause more problems for an owner of an LLC than anything else, because now they're going to have to go and formalize any kind of money that they put into the company. So are you saying that they decide that they need to do a mailer, and they've got to go buy five books of stamps, that they have to have like a little receipt to say, okay, I'm loaning my company $50 because I had to buy stamps, and they can't reimburse themselves for that?
Kathy, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kathy Scher. I'm the acting director of the audit division. And I just want to clarify that the concept of a deemed dividend is a concept in federal law and it's a concept in state law. And what it means is that there has been a distribution out to the owner of the company. And it is, as John has said, disguised. And by that, what we mean is that it's in excess of compensation, and it is not a legitimate expense of the corporation. If it's a legitimate expense of the corporation, it's not a dividend. That's legitimate. What we look to, and the entity can make loans to its owners, but if there's no objective intention to pay it back, there's no interest rate or whatnot, then it's not truly a loan, and it's been mischaracterized by the taxpayer. That's a deemed dividend. It's a concept that has a great deal of analysis under the federal law, as well as under state law, and it's a way of pulling monies out of a company without characterizing them appropriately.
Representative Casey, then Senator Clark, and then Senator Pacheco.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember the Watergate hearings, but one of the attorneys always used to say, I'm just a simple country lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, so I guess I'm just simple country. But I'm trying to struggle to understand what you're saying. And I think I did after that last explanation. But my question is we're here to adopt rules. And I'm not sure that if we don't understand it absolutely, the question of whether or not it's gone through the process to have the public and the people that really do understand this clearly, was there any indication that this was a problem for any of them?
What the problem was that we encountered was our initial interpretation of debt financed by the entity. And what we were trying to get at there was the, say for example, and I don't want to get too far off on this because it's not what's in the rules currently, but originally the thought was that if you had an entity that owned a building, okay, and they're not making any profits or whatever, but then they take a loan on the building and then distribute those amounts to the owners, potentially you would have a taxable distribution because you've essentially distributed out the gain on that building. But that met with a lot of opposition. And so we drew back from that and decided to stick with what is an accepted, understandable in the accounting community concept of constructive or deemed dividend. And I know it's awkward to explain in a hypothetical way, but it is an accepted standard, and it's a standard that we've used in the IND arena all along. It's not something new. It's just now stated.
Another question? Thank you. So, in your initial plan, you made some changes to reflect the concerns of the public process.
This can now reflect the society's recommendations.
And after you made those changes, you re-adopted this, have there been any concerns subsequent to that?
Well, I'm sure you'll have folks from the community come up and talk to it, but our understanding is that this is met with considerable relief.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Senator Porter-Clark, as we've done the questions and discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hate to belabor a point. I just want to make sure that I understand it. And probably the best way for me to understand it is to talk about something my husband and I have, which is the C-Corp.
Mm-hmm.
When he, because it follows on some of the questions that Senator Carson had. When he started in business, we were poor as church mice, and I floated, you know, the living expenses for the home. He drew no salary. We just kept pouring in. Then finally, he began to draw our salary. Now, we never, we may have made direct loans, and then we took those back. I don't think we were taxed on them. But we never really extracted from the company his sweat equity, the kinds of things that went into it, you know, that just sort of needed to be done. So if there was money in our personal checkbook, we did it. At the point where that company started to make money, and if we decided to do distributions, and assuming all of the things that you said, that we had an actual formal loan document, and I suppose that's the catch here, is that the way we set it up? Every time we put 10 cents into it, we should have said, that's a loan from an officer, and here's how we, you know, it gets paid back.
Well, Senator Cilley, I'm in a very similar situation to you. My husband has a single-member LLC, and we've done exactly the same thing. So I do understand from a practical standpoint how this works. what we're talking about are major distributions out to shareholders in excess of the compensation and so forth. And a C corporation certainly wouldn't be in that position. But it would be those distributions of accumulated profits that are not accounted for as such. They'd be loans that do not have I'll reiterate it, loans that do not have the incidence that you expect from a loan, a repayment plan, a market interest rate, things along that line. There are criteria that we look to in determining. It's not an arbitrary analysis.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Schmidt, you have been recognized.
Thank you. Your use of the word major raises a question in my mind as to how the taxpayer is supposed to know what is major. I mean, we all recognize big money is major, okay? But how little does it have to be before any major?
Well, I would say on a technical level, it should be documenting all of any distribution should be documented. But in terms of, you know, my function, and I look at this in view of my function, I can't tell you what major would be. All I can say is that if it's a distribution and it's not a legitimate loan, then it's probably a dividend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please show me on the proposed rules where there is some real clarity on this particular issue of deemed or disguised dividends?
I think if you look at the... on page 10, there's an analysis of deemed dividends. There's also an example in the back of the kind of situation that we're talking about.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the pieces that's missing here for me is this idea of reasonable compensation.
Yes.
I think, as we all know, the legislature is going through the process right now of determining what that might be. So I think that that's one reason why this is not clear. And I still have some real difficulty with this idea of what...
Kathy, we're not dealing with...
I understand, and there's no... question.
I hopefully am not going to
right.
be going into
no.
the policy
Stay out of the cap.
Right.
Because, and I'm very much aware that elsewhere in this building and in the next building, there are issues that are being looked at on this, and that would probably be the appropriate place to address those questions.
My comment, Mr. Chair, was that might be why I am having difficulty, because mm-hmm. we haven't defined mm-hmm. that issue yet.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I just want to go back to this concept of disguised or deemed dividend. And it's my understanding that this is not a new concept, that this concept has been dealt with over a number of years, and that there is a history of how one goes about determining mm-hmm. a deemed or disguised dividend, and that if there was an owner of an entity that wanted to challenge that, there is sort of case law or tax advice that would address that on an individual-to-individual tax return. Is that correct?
That yes. is correct, and it is an issue that we currently deal with under the business profits tax. So the concept is not new at all to New Hampshire or any other tax.
Thank you. Okay. Please do not leave the building. You may want, if you need an extra pad to take notes as to what
okay.
comments come up. I'm sorry, Senator Dragon, I have not tonight. I have to call on the police.
Probably wouldn't in this case. You haven't had a profit from your example. You've only put money into it.
Okay.
So that would be a return of capital. You wouldn't even...
Right.
Okay. So if my business had shown some kind of a profit, and I took this, I would pay a dividend tax on that money that I loaned myself.
To the extent it wasn't a legitimate loan, yes. Only if it doesn't have the incidence of a true debt.
Then someone comes along and wants to buy my company, and they say, well, that's not a true loan, even though you have a piece of paper that says you're going to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
You're the officer, and it's good to be king, so you can decide whether you're going to pay him back or not. So they say, I'm only going to buy your company for what's in the bank right now. So I'm going to pay you $100,000 for what's in the bank, and that loan is, that's your problem. So now I've been taxed for this money that I borrowed against. But now I'm stuck with repaying the whole thing. So I'm just, it doesn't seem that somebody who does that can potentially be taxed on something.
The person who bought your business, though, would have bought it subject to whatever loan is out there. And if they're only willing to pay a certain amount of money, I don't know how you're structuring your deal, but it would seem to me that that would be a factor in the sales price. Not something that you would retain as an individual.
Okay.